we're discussing issues around breastfeeding and the impact of the pandemic on infant nutrition. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Washington Post is shining a light on Olympic mothers with at least a dozen moms who are competing for Team USA at the Tokyo Olympics. There was tension leading up to the games over whether mothers could travel with their infants since foreign spectators are banned. And initially, organizers said no, no. But they reversed course and made an exception for athletes who are breastfeeding. Are you nursing now? How is it going? What would you like to say about breastfeeding in your life and the connection to your baby? What worries you about nursing and COVID? 800-642-1234. Beth Olson is an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. And over the past 15 years, her name has been on dozens of scholarly publications connected to breastfeeding and maternal health. Beth, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me on this morning.
Well, you know, the pandemic has changed so much in our lives. And start with some higher level observations for us. What has been the impact on breastfeeding?
Well, we're not completely sure yet. I think time will tell. We've seen two, I would say, kind of diverse things happening. One is, since women were, many women were home more with their babies if they were new babies, we had some women who got to breastfeed for longer. They didn't have to pump at work, for instance, because they were home with their babies. Alternatively, especially early on in the epidemic or the pandemic, moms were somewhat isolated. So some of the support that they might have gotten, either in the hospital, because some were discharged early home, or from healthcare providers they would have seen in person, or support services, or even family that couldn't come and see the baby, they lacked support. And so some women reported that it was not as good a time because they just didn't have who they needed around them to help them.
Yeah, that support system is so important for, you know, certainly after those early days. What about lactation services? Did lactation services carry on after these births, and in what way?
I think, like many services that happen, in the beginning we just had tremendous disruption because we didn't know, you know, who should be seeing who. Face-to-face contact was extremely limited, and so a lot of services fell off. Mm-hmm. But then we did a lot of pivoting, like we did in a lot of our services. We began to reach out through virtual means, you know, on computers, phone calls, and other ways. And so I think a lot of our healthcare professionals, as well as our public health workers, really pivoted on a dime, if you will, and kind of took up the mantle and went out and found ways to reach women in a virtual setting. Of course, for some women, that was wonderful. But for some women, it wasn't. Not everybody had access to technology. And, you know, some problems aren't easily solved over the phone or on a Zoom or something like that. They really needed that in-person touch.
I was wondering, you know, how effective is telehealth in the area of breastfeeding?
Yeah, again, it was very mixed.
Okay.
I think some of it depends on the individual. Some people are good with that, just like some of us, you know, transitioning to working at home or having our meetings on Zoom. You know, some of us did really well because it suited our style. And for other people, it's just not as comfortable. And of course, in a home setting, you know, you are at home, you have the baby, but on the other hand, you might have other kids you were trying to homeschool, you might have a spouse that was home working, you know, the dog's barking. So you also have all those distractions at home. So it just depended on, I think, on the individual and also the quality. You know, some, I think, healthcare systems and public health agencies were better set up to reach out than others who were perhaps smaller or had less experience.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about breastfeeding in the pandemic with Beth Olson. She's an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. You can join in. What has your experience been nursing in these times? How has the pandemic affected your feedings? How has it affected your ability to deliver the nutrition to your new baby? 800-642-1234. Beth, if you would, you know, clear the air on the COVID vaccine. If you are pregnant or nursing, what is CDC guidance on getting vaccinated?
Yes. So CDC recommends that pregnant and nursing women go ahead and get the vaccine. Of course, for any one person, they should always be in touch with their health care provider. Different people have different medical circumstances or different concerns that they should be sure to address with their own health care provider. But in general, CDC recommends that pregnant women and breastfeeding women do get the vaccine. It's not been shown to cause any problem yet, certainly. So far, it's looking quite safe. But also, there's some immunity that we believe is probably passed on to your unborn baby or to your breastfeeding baby, you know, who can't get the vaccine. And so it's some added protection for them as well.
I would imagine that studies and research are in high gear on this because, you know, the CDC even says there are currently limited data on the safety of COVID-19 vaccines in pregnant people. And, you know, that's a quote directly. So I would imagine that you're seeing a lot of activity in the research community.
Yes, yes. And that's one reason that they're encouraging every woman who, you know, everybody, but certainly every pregnant woman and, you know, breastfeeding women who get the vaccine to participate in their program, where you can get an app on your phone and report weekly, and then after that at a longer duration, if you do have any side effects, because that's going to be, in addition to the studies that they do, that'll be a good way for them to track, you know, what has been the effect of this vaccine.
What are the early studies showing in whether breastfeeding mothers who get the vaccine can pass protections on to their infants?
Yeah, the early studies would suggest that they do. Now, we haven't gone long enough or had the kind of studies to actually track, for instance, illness in the infant. But at least so far, there is no evidence that that I'm aware of that any infant has contracted COVID from breastfeeding. And there is some evidence to show that there is antibodies, once women are vaccinated, antibodies in the milk that are going to pass to the baby. So how effective they are in protecting the baby, we're not sure yet. But it does suggest that this, like many other viruses, for instance, or other diseases that a nursing mom gets, she develops antibodies and then she passes those on to the infant and they appear to protect the infant.
And I would imagine that is one of the really huge major areas with breastfeeding and nutrition is that ability to pass on those antibodies.
Exactly. And just in general, you know, right now, of course, we're worried about COVID, but there's always diseases that anybody can contract. And so a huge benefit of breastfeeding is there are many immune factors in the milk that directly affect protecting the baby. But there's also things in the breast milk that help the baby's gut develop, which is one of their first lines of defense against any kind of disease, and help them develop their immune system. So in general, breastfed babies tend to be a little bit healthier, have a little more resistance to infections and to certain diseases because of all those protective factors and stimulating factors in breast milk.
Beyond the protective factors, why is breastfeeding the preferred feeding method for newborns? What are the advantages?
Well, there's advantages I just want to throw in because sometimes people don't think about it. There's advantages to mothers in terms of her own health is improved with breastfeeding. She has some reduced risk of certain kinds of cancer. She recovers more quickly from delivery. There's also, with all the skin-to-skin of breastfeeding, excellent bonding between moms and babies when babies are breastfed. And then, again, there's health benefits for the babies. They have less chance of having certain respiratory and ear infections, a lower risk of certain cancers, a better chance at achieving kind of a healthier weight gain in their first year, which may carry on into later years. And then it's once it's established, it isn't always easy for everybody to get breastfeeding established. Once established, though, it is quite convenient. It's kind of there at the right temperature, at the ready, whenever needed. There's no mixing up of a bottle or carrying around formula. You know, you're just ready to go whenever your baby needs to eat.
Beth Olson is at the intersection of nutrition and breastfeeding in UW-Madison's Nutritional Sciences Department. As World Breastfeeding Week is coming up next week, what accommodations should employers make for people who are breastfeeding while working in an office or another location? Did you encounter challenges while breastfeeding? What kind of support did you need? How did you work through it? And what do you wish you could have done differently? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Beth Olson here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about breastfeeding in the pandemic on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Health Organization recommends breastfeeding people get vaccinated. The Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine, it says there's little plausible risk that mRNA vaccine nanoparticles would enter breast tissue or transfer into milk. How has the pandemic affected your feedings? Has it made it easier or harder? Were you able to connect with a lactation consultant through telemedicine? Join in 800-642-1234. Beth Olson is an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison with us for the hour. Let's bring in Lisa now from Port Washington. Hi, Lisa. What's been your experience?
Hi, I had my kid just about right before the pandemic started, so I was able to get, you know, additional support before everything shut down. But during the pandemic, I found that I was actually able to pump longer than I probably would have if I was back at work. You know, I was able to take a break when I needed to, pump at my desk if I needed to. It was very convenient for me in the pumping. So I think I ended up going until my little one was 18 months old, which I don't think I would have been able to do, and especially in Wisconsin where, you know, the requirement is only to provide a room until they're a year old.
Oh, Lisa, thank you for bringing that up. So, Beth, what do you see there in Lisa's story about being able to pump longer?
Yeah, well, first, congratulations to her. Not many women make it to 18 months, and that's wonderful for her and her baby. But I think her story is not at all unusual in that we really provide or require that most employers, not all, and not all women are eligible, provide really a minimum of support, which is a room that isn't a restroom, and break time, which does not have to be paid, to pump. They don't have the right to breastfeed the baby in the company, but to pump. And indeed, it doesn't have to be provided long enough for some women. But for many women, you know, that room could be two buildings over. It could be locked with a key. They have to go sign out. And if you have a 15-minute break, you can imagine, you know, getting there. And then, you know, there is women still reporting, you know, their manager's not supportive, or coworkers, you know, make comments about them being gone from their desk and things like that, that make it really hard, even with those accommodations, for many women. So I think that's where we are seeing women who could stay at home longer, finding that they could more easily breastfeed or pump and do it for a longer duration.
Yeah, you know, in my day, breast pumps were costly and they weren't covered by insurance at that time. And that's really changed, where now you can get an insurance-covered breast pump. Is that right?
Yes. Now, the kind of pump varies. Uh-huh. So that, you know, that can still be, you know, the kind of the best quality pumps may still be hard to obtain. In some companies, larger companies in particular that are very progressive, they'll provide that kind of high-quality pump at work, and then there are parts that each individual woman would purchase or maybe provided by the company to use. So that's, you know, providing a better quality pump is also a piece of the puzzle in trying to get women able to breastfeed longer if they're working.
Clarify for us, what are breastfeeding people guaranteed by law for accommodations at work?
Yeah, so it is this non-restroom space, and unpaid, it can be unpaid break time. Right now, this really applies to, I think it's called non-exempt workers. It's really the workers who are not salaried. So it doesn't, for instance, apply to people on higher positions often in a company. The company has to have 50 workers or more. They can claim some exemptions. So there is some estimates I've seen recently that about 50% of working women, or 50% of companies, I'm sorry, provide some kind of lactation support program. So indeed, it's not not available to everybody.
You know, I felt the change personally going from bathroom to actual room during my years. And it was really before and after the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. How, you know, can you explain how the ACA gave people who want to breastfeed more ability to do so?
Yes, that was, you know, people really focused on health care related to the Affordable Care Act. But as you mentioned, it also provided that insurance should cover some type of support services. Sometimes those have been very limited, but sometimes they're more extensive, and then providing pumps, but also requiring that employers do provide some space that's not a restroom. Now, it doesn't have to be a deluxe lactation room, and for one, many women, it doesn't need to be. You know, it can be a very small, efficient space that's private. It doesn't have to be something big and expensive, although that's lovely. And then again, this time off. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're concerned about is that we still hear many women saying, yeah, that's available, but I really can't make use of it. Either it's not designed in a way that's efficient, it's too far away, or they feel the pressure from others in their company that they're taking time away from work. They might not be productive. Maybe they're not plumb to be picked for the next good assignment. So there's still a lot of kind of intangible supports that are not there for women. The tangible ones are coming, but I think some of the intangible haven't come yet.
We're talking about breastfeeding with Beth Olson, who is an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. And you can share your experience. Did you encounter challenges when breastfeeding? What kind of support did you need? What was the feedback from your coworkers, your colleagues? What could have made breastfeeding better and easier for you? 800-642-1234. So, Beth, how should breastfeeding people prepare for this return to work, or if people have been working at home and are preparing to go back to the office, what would you suggest in terms of preparations?
Well, I think something they should do is see if they can find within their company what the resources are. And if there's a person to talk to, particularly if there's someone, for instance, in human resources responsible for the program, who they can talk to and say, you know, what is the policy here? What are my rights? And then perhaps with that person's help, or if one is comfortable, speaking with whoever is your direct manager or supervisor. Most women report that that's a person who has the biggest influence on how they use their resources, if that person is supportive or not. It can be a difficult conversation, you know, unlike, you know, perhaps just saying I need to help because my child's sick today and I need to be off. The conversation about breastfeeding does use the word breast, and for some women that's not comfortable. For some managers, it's not comfortable. Particularly, we've heard from male managers, you know, I want to be supportive, but I don't want to go up to a woman and talk to her about breastfeeding if she hasn't initiated the conversation. That's uncomfortable. I don't want her to be uncomfortable. So I think reaching out to HR and saying, how do we get this conversation started to set things up before I come back? Perhaps while you're pregnant or while you're on leave, calling back and saying, how can we get those conversations and work this out so that it works for everybody?
As you look at those conversations, you have a study project, the Breastfeeding and Employment Study, too. Can you explain what you're working on there?
Yes, we're looking at developing an intervention that we would use with companies that would help them in the implementation of their support program. So unlike what we've seen somewhat in the past of a company says, well, we're going to have these rooms, women get this break time, and then they send out a memo to their managers, and then that's it. And the actual implementation isn't considered. They didn't develop the program, for instance, with the input of those moms or their coworkers or their managers. When they rolled it out, they didn't provide that kind of education to managers. Here's how to have the conversation. If you're uncomfortable, here's where to come for help. And then they don't evaluate it and keep it monitored going forward to say what's working, what's not. If I have these beautiful rooms and this time and say I use logbooks and no one's using it, is that because they don't need it or is that because there's something else going on that I didn't consider? So we're looking at putting together a toolkit and facilitation guides and perhaps the use of a facilitator to actually put it in place in a way that makes it effective.
When you talk with organizations and you work with them, are they at all different stages in how they approach this with their employees?
Oh, exactly. Some are, you know, already there. They don't need anything. Some are at the very beginning stages. They've complied with the law, but that's as far as they've gotten. We've heard back through companies that provide these kind of services that companies say, you know, I made these rooms and no one's using them. I don't know what to do. So they just don't know what the next steps are. And so they are in many kind of stages. We talk about it in terms of a theory that we call workplace climate or workplace climate for breastfeeding. In some companies, there's just no sense if you're around in the company that this is something that women would be wanting to do or we would expect to support them to do. Where in others, they're at the other end where this is just a part of people having families. We support moms. Everybody does it. Doesn't matter if it isn't my baby. I still support it because it's good for her, so therefore it's good for my company.
Let's pause there as we look at issues surrounding breastfeeding in our country with nutritional sciences professor Beth Olson. You can join in with your experience, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for a conversation about breastfeeding and what it's been like in the pandemic era. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The National Institutes of Health, the NIH, launched in an observational study last month to study the immune responses of COVID vaccines given to pregnant or postpartum people. And the investigators plan to enroll up to 1,000 participants and infants in the study and follow them for the first year after delivery. What questions do you have about breastfeeding research? What messages are communicated about nursing in your community or at your workplace? 800-642-1234. Beth Olson is a breastfeeding researcher, associate professor in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. Let's bring in Creel now in Madison. Hi, Creel. What is your experience?
Hi. Oh, my goodness. I'm so happy to be on and just so excited that you're having this conversation.
Oh,
I have
good.
A 7-month-old. She was born Christmas Day. And so we were, you know, right in the middle of wintertime pandemic experience. And my comment just relates to we were fortunate enough to be able to have a midwife. We had planned for a home birth and the home birth didn't work out. So we did birth in a hospital. But because we had planned for to work with a midwife at home, She and her student midwife came to see us in home. So you were talking a little bit about what types of support, lactation support, did you have access to or not? And just having that, the services of someone to come into my home as a brand new mother. She came, you know, day one, day three, day 10, day 14. And then I think again, day maybe 4 months or 1 month. That in-home care was just really critical, I think, to me and my husband being able to feel supported because neither, you know, we were trying to figure out how to deal with our families coming to visit and getting that support during COVID. And we did, you know, we wore masks with our midwife and the student midwife, and we had these sort of like filter fans running, and we tried to limit time a little bit, but that support was just amazing. And I can't imagine having to have gone into the hospital, you know, with all of their procedures and everything. And the one other thing I'll just say is that those services were not covered by our insurance. So we paid for that out of pocket. And that's a really, you know, severe equity issue right there that that should be addressed. And I would really encourage people to, you know, reach out to their insurance companies and ask for that to be a service that's covered.
Oh, Creel, thank you so much for sharing your story. Beth, what do you hear there about that in-home support?
Yes, there's unfortunately here in the United States with the way that our insurance system runs, we often don't support that kind of help, particularly for people who have private insurance, that is, you know, insurance through their work. There are programs through public health for people who are of limited income, where they do have home visiting nurses who often can address something like this. There are, through the Women, Infant, and Children program, the Supplemental Nutrition Program, many of those have peer counselors who we'll either see women in an office, but sometimes in their homes. And often those people are, because they're peer counselors, they understand what women are going through. They're from their community. They've been in the same circumstances. They've breastfed a baby. So they really understand what the barriers are that women are up against. But I totally agree. And in other countries, for instance, in some in Europe, every woman who goes home with a new baby gets visited at home by a healthcare worker. And that just gets the mom and the baby and the family off to just the best start. There's nothing like having, you know, somebody in your home seeing what you're doing, what you're up against, what you have as resources to help you to get going in taking care of your baby just in general, as well as for breastfeeding. I just think it's a wonderful service that would be wonderful if we could provide to more women.
Creel, thanks for the call. Chris now in Racine. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have found that though there are places and rooms and time that is accommodated, there has been no refrigeration provided. And so what is happening is women are pumping their breasts and then dumping it just to keep the production going normally. But I haven't seen accommodation with refrigeration.
Yeah, refrigeration and running water, Beth.
Yeah, very important. In the recommendations for lactation support, certainly refrigeration is one. And, you know, we would prefer separate refrigeration. For instance, a refrigeration right within a lactation room. There are women also, you know, if you will, because they're embarrassed, you know, hiding their milk in bottles and bags and then taking them and putting them in the refrigerator with, you know, that people are using for their lunches. There's nothing unsanitary about that. Breast milk is, you know, very clean. It's it has protective agents to keep it good. But still, they're using that because there is no refrigeration provided. And, you know, it would just break my heart, you know, when I would hear or see women dumping milk. I know I traveled for work when my children were little, and I went to just extraordinary measures, you know, calling the front desk and begging for them to bring me up a mini fridge before those were common, you know, so that I could refrigerate milk. And then fortunately for me, it was pre-9/11 where liquids were an issue, and then carrying it with ice packs home, you know, so that I didn't have to dump any, because that's, you know, it's a tremendous resource, a tremendous effort to get it. So helpful for the baby. So to have to pour it out is just really a shame.
Chris, what have you experienced, may I ask? You know, how are you now?
Well, I'm helping others now because I'm past the... What I did is I didn't have refrigeration when and so I did dump. And then eventually I did quit pumping during the day, and my breast production did accommodate. I would breastfeed before I went to work, and I would breastfeed the second I got home. And then I would breastfeed through the night without any issue. But until that was after I had that set up after a year, I was fine. But during that first 3 months, you absolutely have to pump during the first 6 months to... You have to pump
to get
in order
that supply
to keep production
up.
To keep it coming. And I dumped the milk. But what's happening is employees are squeamish about having anyone's body fluids in their food refrigerator. It makes them squeamish, a lot of them. And I think that's education and acceptance. But a refrigerator in the breast pump room would just be so ideal. And I'm finding that I work with patients, and I'm finding that there isn't accommodation for their breast milk either, and it is being dumped.
Chris, thank you for sharing your experience as we talk about breastfeeding with Beth Olson, an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. Let's bring in Renee now in Stevens. Hi, Renee.
Hi. Thank you for doing this show. It's been so informative, and I think it's just so important to get this information out there. A few years ago, I was training to become a postpartum doula. I think most people are very used to and are now used to the idea of a birth doula who helps you, you know, prior to the birth of your child and during the birthing process. A postpartum doula is there for you once you come home. We would work with you through that 3 month period of time mm-hmm. after the birth of your child, that postpartum time. I did not continue. I was trained and got the training, but I did not continue simply because where I live, there wasn't a great demand for it. I think in the Madison and Milwaukee area, I think it was, you might find more demand for a postpartum doula. But I did work with a few women, and one woman in particular that I was able to help with the lactation process and issues. You're trained as a postpartum doula to be very knowledgeable and learn a lot about the breastfeeding process, of course, other things as well. But you go into the family's home, you're there to help them.
It's a very adjust. Personal experience and
it very much
individual.
Yes. And you need to develop this trust relationship as well. And it is very individual. You do what the family feels they need. And I just think if we had more access, women, families had more access, how great that would be to have someone there with expertise and knowledge who's right there with you on a daily basis for that 3 months.
Beth, let's hear what Beth has to say about that trust and about those relationships.
Yes, that's really important. And I think, you know, the need for this is just, you know, how we've evolved or changed in society. You know, someone like my grandmother, you know, and I'm older now, so she would, you know, she was, this was quite some time ago, you know, she had her babies at home and her family lived, you know, on the nearby farms. And so her sisters or her mother or cousins would come over and we called, it's been called in by a nurse midwife, mothering the mother. And they would pass on the traditions of motherhood. Here's how you hold the baby. Here's how you feed the baby. You know, and they helped her with her cooking and her cleaning. But as times went on, my mother, for instance, recalls when she had her children, nobody helped her. She was away from her family. She was in the hospital now. There weren't lactation consultants available, and nobody helped. So I think now we're moving back to realizing we do need that kind of support, but we don't all live in a community with all of our relatives who can come over and help us. And, of course, during COVID, often family couldn't come. And so the support of someone like a postpartum doula, you know, is just a wonderful idea. Again, there probably aren't enough of them. Again, you know, you may need to pay for those services, and some women can't afford them, don't know about them. But I think they are developing then that trust, that support, that feeling of family, of a peer, that we used to perhaps in days gone by get from our immediate family who were around us.
That history. Yeah. Breastfeeding researcher Beth Olson at UW-Madison with us on how the pandemic has changed infant nutrition. While breastfeeding, did your diet change? Did you make a deliberate effort to eat certain foods, avoid others? Do you worry about expressing milk at work and have time and space to do it? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Beth Olson on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with UW-Madison nutrition scientist Beth Olson on breastfeeding and what has changed in the pandemic. The CDC says in boldface type, if you are pregnant, you can receive a COVID-19 vaccine. It goes on to say getting the vaccine during pregnancy can protect you from severe illness from COVID. Beth Olson, she's with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Susie now in Milwaukee. Hi, Susie.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, as an employer who very much is in support of women and women in the workplace, I had a staff recently who had a baby and was breastfeeding and pumping in work and trying to support that. And it, my question is, where is the balance in supporting her and the time that it took her to do this with like an hour at a time? It's a direct service kind of business where she's working with clients in residential treatment who are always present. And she's got only a couple other coworkers. So when she's off pumping, and sometimes she would do it privately, sometimes she wouldn't. There was ability to do that privately. It created some conflict because of the amount of time when she's doing this, then everybody else is covering for her, or else if we were in meetings, then she would pump during a meeting and it made people uncomfortable, or she had to see clients, she would pump while seeing clients and it made people uncomfortable, and everybody was also nervous about saying something to her. So my question is, where's the balance around that?
Beth.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of thing we'd like to address, you know, moving forward in our research. Is how do we address that up front before, you know, someone's in our workplace needing this accommodation and we haven't figured it out? And there are situations which are going to be much more tricky where companies are small, there aren't as many people to cover, where there's a lot of interaction. You know, when you think about it, people who travel for work a lot, salespeople, so they don't have a lactation room because they're traveling around the country. Or, you know, some other area. So what do we do for them? And so that's something that needs to be addressed in the beginning with workflow. Is there a way for us to change what we're doing for the short term? And I think what people need to realize now, an hour to pump is fairly long. That's usually not what it takes if someone has accommodation close to where they are. But also we need to remember that frequency and that amount of pumping is short term. Most women, you know, are coming back to work maybe 6 weeks or 3 months. Here in the U.S., where we don't have any federal paid leave like they do in other countries, we come back sooner. So after that, though, the intensity of pumping is probably for about 3 months. And then the baby starts to eat solid food. They don't need as much breast milk, and a woman doesn't need to pump as much. So as one of the callers was saying, it gets to a point where you can sometimes even pump or breastfeed your baby before and after work, and you don't need to pump during the day. So it is a short term, you know, not ongoing for a couple of years like some people sometimes think. But again, those conversations have to happen very early on and involve all the people involved, like coworkers. Like, what are you comfortable with? What could we do to make this easier for you as well as the mom who's pumping, so that everybody's role is understood and accommodated?
Yeah, it's where the paving those policies early on and having those policies established also would help the in you know, making sure that you know what's happening with breastfeeding and where you can do it and just all the things around it. Casey in Milwaukee is with us. Casey, hi.
Hi there.
Hi, what would you like to add?
So I just wanted to add, you're touching on a lot of different issues and things dealing with breastfeeding. And I just had my third child a month ago, and I am nursing.
Oh.
I've nursed and pumped and breastfed all of my kids exclusively. And with my first, it was really, really, really challenging. Lactation consulting was not covered by insurance, and I needed help really badly. My daughter was never able to nurse, and I wound up just pumping for her for over a year. It was really hard, and I think I had postpartum depression as a result of that. And I think it's just so, so important that people push their insurance companies and push their employers to support breastfeeding and to support policies that support breastfeeding, because if you don't, nothing's going to change. So I now work for a company where the insurance covered lactation consulting, and I was able to get help with my second child, and it went much smoother. And now this time around, it's the easiest it's ever been. And so it's just, and I've written to my company because their maternity leave policy was, in my opinion, way too short. And I wrote to HR and said, you know, you need to reconsider this maternity leave policy. 5 weeks is not enough. It's not enough time. And nothing has changed yet, but, you know, you just got to, you got to speak up and you have to stand up for what you want. And hopefully, you know, breastfeeding will become more normalized and it'll become just, you know, something super normal, and companies will all have policies that support it and let women pump whenever they need to and whatever. But it's just so important to, like, be your own advocate and just say something.
Yeah, Casey, thank you for saying something and joining us. Beth, you know, Casey saying, speak up.
Exactly. That's what we need. First of all, I want to commend her on her dedication, because that is not easy to breastfeed, period, in our society, cannot, and work, and then to do all that pumping. But she did a wonderful thing for her baby, and that's just, I really commend her. But I think in the one of the themes that is being brought out in the National Breastfeeding Month and World Breastfeeding Week is community. In other words, there's a tendency for us to just think, well, this is a personal decision. This woman can decide what she wants to do. But sometimes she can't. Sometimes the decision isn't all up to her because she doesn't have what she needs. And that is something where our whole community can come together and say, we're going to make public spaces friendly for breastfeeding. We are, as companies, going to support families, which includes breastfeeding. And we're all going to do this because it's good for society as a whole. Having healthier babies means having healthier children, means having healthier adults. Healthier moms are healthier adults. That takes a burden off our healthcare system. That makes people more productive. They're better contributors to society. So this isn't just about, well, she can decide what she wants to do. It's, if a woman wants to breastfeed and we help her do that, we're all going to win. Companies are going to win in their productivity, their reduced healthcare costs. We're going to win when people in general are healthier, can work, can reach their full potential right from birth.
When we only have a few moments left here, but when you look at the CDC data, Wisconsin being below the national average in breastfeeding initially at birth, what can Wisconsin do to boost those numbers?
I think the public health campaigns, the social media campaigns to raise awareness is one. I think the government providing some incentives, some recognition, some help in terms of companies getting lactation programs started, encouragement, public recognition for public health spaces and communities that take this on and say, we are going to be a friendly community for breastfeeding moms. All those kind of things would help. And then I think, just as an individual, I do this when I see a woman in public, you know, breastfeeding, I try to just meet her eye and give her a smile and a little nod, like, you know, good for you. Because oftentimes they don't get that kind of positive reinforcement when they're out and about. And for some women, it makes a big difference to know, hey, this person doesn't even know me and they think I'm doing a good job. You know, that's just wonderful.
Beth, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. I was pleased to be on, and thank you for asking me.
Beth Olson is an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison, the author or co-author of dozens of scholarly articles on breastfeeding. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.